The roll call be dispensed with and the sergeant-at-arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Today's chaplain is Reverend Bob Hart from the Transfiguration Catholic Church in Oakdale.
Let us pray. Loving God, blessed Spirit, understanding Yahweh, your blessings reach to the ends of the earth. Confirm us in our common task that we may walk together with you and with each other. Bless the men and women gathered here, the senators and staff who have been entrusted with the responsibility of seeing to the well-being of the people of Minnesota. From the abundance of your mercy, enrich them and safeguard them. May all their work be in a spirit of cooperation and be brought to conclusion through your power and guidance. Watch over them and guide them as only you can. Give them the wisdom necessary to make prudential judgments, especially during this time of fiscal uncertainty, and keep them ever mindful of the people they have been elected to serve, particularly those who have so little and depend on those of us who have so much. Then, strengthened by your blessing, may they remember to be thankful that they have been elected to do this work. We also remember in a special way the families affected by the deadly bus crash in Cottonwood. May they be comforted and supported by friends and strangers alike. I ask this in the name of the God or spirit of each person's understanding, whoever or whatever that may be. Amen.
Amen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Secretary will take the roll.
Anderson, Bach, Berglund, Betzold, Bonoff, Carlson, Chaudhry, Clark, Cohen, Dahl, Day, Dibble, Dill, Dahl, Erickson, Ropes, Fischbach, Foley, Fredrickson, Gerlach, Gimsey, Han, Higgins, Ingebrigtsen, Johnson, Jungbauer, Koch, Coring, Kubley, Langseth, Larson, Latz, Slimmer, Laurie, Lynch, Marty, Metzen, Michelle, Moi, Murphy, Olsen, Olsen G, Olsen M, Ortman, Pappas, Pariseau, Pogemiller, Pretner, Solon, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Rummel, Saltzman, Saxhog, Scheid, Senjum, Sharon, Sieben, Skoy, Skogan, Sparks, Stumpf, Tomasoni, Torres Ray, Vandeveer, Vickerman, Wergen, and Wieger.
Quorum is present. First order of business is messages from the House.
Mr. President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File 2590, signed Elbin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk of the House of Representatives.
Next order of business is first reading of House bills. There's one on today's agenda. Without objection, be referred to the committee as indicated. Next order of business is reports of committees. Senator Betzel, do you wish to adopt the...
Mr. President, I move that the committee reports printed in today's agenda be adopted.
On the Betzel motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Next order of business is motions and resolutions. I will take the motions without objection as one motion. generally authors motions here. All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. There's one resolution, number 144, without objection. The Higgins, Senator Higgins' motion will be referred to the Rules Committee. Next order of business, we're going to jump to remaining on motions, the introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's agenda. There are two changes, one on page 4, 2942 will be sent to the Finance Committee, 2945 to the Agriculture and Veterans Committee. And on page 6, there are two changes, 2961 Finance, 2964 to the Finance Committee. Without objection, first reading and introduction of Senate bills. Remaining on motions, Senator Pogemiller, did you wish to make a motion and take up the consent calendar? Is that what you like to do?
I move that we revert to the consent calendar. There's one bill on the consent calendar.
On the motion to revert to the consent calendar, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. The only bill on the consent calendar for Thursday, February 21st, Senate File 2428, Senator Rest.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Just explain the bill.
Senate File 2428 excuses local governments and school districts from being prohibited from meeting on what was the statutorily designated caucus evening of March 4th. Most of the local governments and school districts did not meet on March 5th because the major parties changed February 5th because most of the local governments decided to follow along with that, although they could have, and in some instances there were indeed school events going on in the same locations as caucuses, but to make sure that any actions they take on the evening of March 4th are in accordance with law, this bill just excuses them from the prohibition on meeting after 6 o'clock on March 4th.
Discussion on the bill. Seeing none, the Secretary will give the bill its third reading.
Senate File 2428, a bill for an act relating to local government allowing meetings and events after 6 p.m. on March 4th, 2008.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 2428. What do we do now? All senators having voted, desire to vote, Secretary will close the roll. In 62 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed. Senator Hand votes aye. There being 63 ayes, 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under motions and resolutions, Senator Pogemiller, did you wish to designate a bill?
Yes.
For?
Mr. President, members, I've discussed this with Senator Senjum. Here's the proposed plan today. I am going to designate House File. Oops.
Senate File. Is it Senate File 2521?
Senator Bedsold threw something away on my desk. I would like to designate 2521, Senate File 2521, to a special order. And then Senator Murphy would discuss that bill. That's the omnibus transportation funding bill that we're all aware of. We would discuss it until about 12:15 today, and then take a break from 12:15 to 2:30 for some committee meetings and a brief lunch break and some committee meetings. We come back at 2:30, pick up where we're at, which is a continued discussion of 2521, take amendments to it, have a full-blown discussion. At some point during the day, it's my understanding that the House intends to send us House File 2800, which is the bill they are debating on the House floor, which is the companion to Senate File 2521. At that point, we would then make a decision in the Senate as to whether we would take up the House file or not today. That would need a suspension of the rules. Under any circumstance, we would consummate our discussion of the Senate file today, and then depending on our decision on the House file, we would then finalize the House file today, or if we're unable to suspend rules, we would likely come back tomorrow and try to suspend rules to take the bill up. If we are unable to do that, we will come back Saturday to process the House file. So members will want to be thinking about that today, and you know, obviously it'll depend on how the debate goes and how comfortable members are with the bills, but that decision with regarding to suspension of the rules to take up the House file will come later today sometime if the House sends us the bill. If they don't send us the bill, we don't have to address that today. So, but I would like to, under either circumstance, complete discussion and amendments to the Senate file today, if we could. So, and we are aware of the bonding committee has a dinner planned. We'll try to accommodate that if we can. But as Senator Langseth is aware, if we're unable to accommodate that, the first objective would be to somehow process the omnibus transportation bill today. And just so you understand, Miles will be very clear about this, there are many members who would like to ultimately process House File 28 today and have it on the governor's desk before midnight tonight. And that would then set in motion a 3 days from midnight tonight. That's what the objective is. If we're unable to do that, we will try to process it by midnight tomorrow night. And if we're unable to do that, we will come back Saturday and process the bill. I would stand for questions before I designate the special order.
Senator Hahn.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just am rising in to ask the question. We all know that we have a shortfall of funds, that our revenues are not what many people expected them to be. We're expecting a update to that forecast at the end of this month, and I have not read the bill. I've just gotten a copy of what we're contemplating discussing and adopting today or tomorrow or whenever, and I'm just wondering whether it would be prudent to hold off having this full debate and discussion of this until we see what our financial picture might be before we commit to revenues and spending that we may discover might not be prudent in light of what we learn on the 28th. And I'm just wondering if, Senator Pogemiller, as the Majority Leader, if you could explain to the body why there is the urgency to do this before we know what our financial status is going to be on the 28th.
Well, Mr. President, that's a discussion I'm sure the members will have today on the Senate floor. I'm just like every member going to make a determination on that. I don't know the pros and cons of that, but we certainly will discuss that today, I'm sure.
And Mr. President. Thank you, Mr. President. And I appreciate that, Senator Pogemiller, but you've asked for it to be on special orders, so I'm guessing that you want us to do this. And so that's why I'm asking why we should be doing this at this point rather than waiting until we get a better sense of what the financial picture should be.
Well, Mr. President.
Senator Pogemiller.
No vote is necessary to designate the special order, and I was just trying to give a full-blown so members understood kind of what the potentials are here. And the reason I would like to designate or intend to designate it as a special order today is because this has been a discussion 10 years in waiting, and I believe it's important to process a comprehensive transportation bill in as orderly and timely process as possible so that we can provide safe, efficient transportation in our state. So I think members are very much aware of this issue. I've talked to the new member who has not been through the debate yet, and he's been spending a lot of time working on the issue. He understands the nuances, because I would have certainly not moved this quickly if our new member was not good to go on it. But I think he's comfortable, and the rest of us have heard the debate numerous times, and so I think we ought to just get to it, you know?
Sarah Limmer.
Thank you, Mr. President. The question I have may be a question to you. It's more of a parliamentary question, or perhaps the majority leader might be able to help me out. The question is if we have a preliminary discussion on the transportation bill as suggested, can we entertain amendments at that time and make action on those when that bill is not formally before us, or would it be considered formally before us?
Sir Polgar Miller?
The Senate file will be formally before us, and we absolutely will discuss amendments. My hope would be we would process whatever amendments members are interested in to the Senate file. And then when the House file comes, we need to make a determination of if they're different, how different they are, and then I presume that will lead members to make a decision as to whether they would like to suspend the rules on the House file or not.
And Mr. President, I'm following up on Senator Hand's question. He made an assertion that he didn't have an opportunity to read the bill. Is there a printed version of the bill that we could look at? Do you know if it's ready to go?
Mr. President, I have a copy. I presume it's on the computer, but I have a copy. I presume it's available to anybody who wants it. As always, there's printed copies, and it's on the computer. So it's not a very long bill. So I'm guessing during the debate, Senator Hand will have the opportunity to read the bill, and would hope he would do so.
And for members, notice again, a Senate file 2521, if you wish to try to find it on your laptops.
Mr. President, then I would designate Senate file 2521 as a special order, and would yield to Senator Murphy.
Senator Murphy on Senate file 2521.
And Senator Murphy, Mr. President.
Senator Polgar Miller.
Mr. President, Senator Murphy, I think you heard this earlier, but the intent would be to recess at 12:15. So perhaps the explanation of the bill, is that possible to get the explanation done before 12:15? Or what's your thinking on that before debate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Polgar Miller, if you're asking, I'm going to need 30 minutes. I could use 30 minutes, yes.
Well, Senator Murphy, you don't need to use 30 minutes. I'm just saying we'd like to get the explanation in before we break. And if we can start moving to amendments and stuff before 12:15, that would be fine, too. So I just wanted to give you a heads up.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Polgar Miller, I'll be done before 12:15.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, members, Senate File 2521 is this year's version of our transportation funding package. Members, we've all heard about the dire need that we have on our roads and transitways and waterways and railways and airways in the state of Minnesota. We are not the only state in this position. Most every other state has major problems with certain pieces of infrastructure in their transportation systems. We're no different. What differentiates the state of Minnesota from many other states is the rapidity and how quickly our roadways are deteriorating and how insufficient our transitways actually are. Our state is going to add another million people in the next 10 years, most of which are going to be housed here in the metropolitan area. Folks,
roads in the metropolitan area cost about $4 million a mile. It's pretty expensive. But if we use a funding stream that's in this bill to provide both roads and transit opportunities, we'll be able to handle that influx of a million people into our state. Folks, I want to turn your attention now to the bill. Article 1 is the transportation appropriations, and they're pretty self-explanatory. They're just like every other transportation bill that have come through here. It gives some appropriating language. It talks about the numbers that are going to go to the municipal street aid fund, the county state aid fund, trunk highway, and also to the general fund. If you go to page 2, you'll look, there's some special one-time appropriations here. One for transit, $1.7 million. One for rail, $250,000. There's $500,000 for port development assistance. Folks, this is a multimodal transportation bill. We're trying to address airports, waterways, railways, and our roadways. You go down the line a little bit further, you see the line for debt service that's carried in this bill. If you go to page 4, it talks about the money that's going to go out to state aid, municipal aid, and also the state aid appropriation, any state aid appropriation adjustments. Page 5 is where a very key point of the bill and part of transportation policy that I think everyone agrees with, and that's adding 40 additional state highway patrol men and women to be out on our roads. There is a cost for that. It's $3.6 million, but it's time to get it done. State troopers help improve the safety of our roads. They're the people who are absolutely the first responders when there is a crash out on our state trunk highway system. They're the ones that help save lives. It's high time that we add more troopers to our roads, and we do it in this bill. If you see the chapter of law right below that, Section 5, this is the appropriation to raise the spending limit at MnDOT so that all the money that was obtained from the federal government can be spent in regards to the I-35W bridge collapse disaster. And it also keeps all of our programming for the OA programming in play. That's page 5, section 5, starting on lines 23. Members, another addition to the bill is on page 6. This is a study that, and we're asking, and we're going to spend $325,000 for this. We've talked with the Center for Transportation Studies. They can absolutely do this study that we're asking them to do. And what we're looking at is capturing the increased value of those areas where we do put in a transit system or a new road and trying to capture that increased value of property and turn around and hopefully spin that back into that transportation piece of infrastructure. And we will be waiting to hear what the Center for Transportation Studies has to say in that regard. This was a study that was been kicked around for a couple years, but there's a lot of people in the industry that want this to happen, and other groups like the Chamber of Commerce. Article 2 is a very exciting new chapter in the state of Minnesota, and I'm going to talk first about some of the language that is in the bill in regards to how we are going to spend the majority of our bonding money the first 2 years. And you have to understand, folks, that we have changed this chapter a couple times. The original bill, we had $2.2 billion of bonding in it. We had a mechanism, two mechanisms. One was the gas surcharge, and the other was the index mechanism to pay for the debt service on the bonds. Members, we just got a report this week from the legislative auditor that points to our increased reliance upon bonds and the debt that it creates as to one of the leading reasons why we are in the state that we are in today with our roads. It has clearly eaten away over 30% of the money that we have traditionally used to provide maintenance on our roads. That's why, like in District 6, MnDOT District 6, where I'm from, that lack of money to maintain our roads is the reason why 80% of our state trunk highway system in District 6 is going to need to be completely replaced in the next 5 years. Now, this bill does something to address that. Not only are we going to issue $1.8 billion of debt, but we are going to, with the debt service surcharge, we're going to pay to retire that debt as it comes online. We're not going to let our grandkids pay for it. Members, the debt service surcharge chapter starts on page 6 and goes through page 7, and it talks about how that surcharge gets ramped up approximately a half a cent every year until it hits its apex, and then it stays on for a period of time to help retire all the debt service that $1.8 billion worth of bonds will provide. But also, members, in this chapter is a guarantee, an absolute guarantee to the people in the state of Minnesota that we are going to fix our state's bridges. We're going to capture $600 million of that first $1 billion of expenditures and bonds, and we're going to put it into a bridge account. And this is separate from the current bridge account. This is money on top of what they already have. With that $600 million, we set up a three-tier system. And I can guarantee people that by 2018, every fracture critical bridge on a state trunk highway that has a deficiency rating of less than 50 will be either replaced or repaired to bring its efficiency ratings up above 80. And folks, if you haven't watched the discussion on how these bridges are rated, anything over 80 is practically a brand new bridge. We're going to guarantee with this bridge portion of this bill that every fracture critical bridge with a 50% efficiency rating or lower is fixed by 2018. And that's a promise to the people of the state of Minnesota. Now, folks, you're also going to find some other monies in here. On page 11, there's money to complete the UPA agreement. That's the Urban Partnership Agreement. Hopefully this works as slick as it has out on 394, where we have expanded a lane, used it as tolling. It's called congestion pricing, and it works. We're one of the first states in the nation to go through this endeavor, and it works. It works, folks, and we want to do it again. We need this $24.5 million to leverage federal money so that we can do the same thing on the I-35W corridor, add capacity, add a lane possibly of tolling, and improve the congestion in that expressway. Folks, it works. We need to do it. There's also money in here. One is for the Mankato District Headquarters. This is the last district headquarters in greater Minnesota to be fixed. It's going to take more than $23 million now. A couple years ago, we could have got it done for $16 or $17 because of inaction. Now we've added $5 or $6 million to the cost. This needs to happen. Nobody disagrees with it. Page 11, line 23, there's $8.6 million for the Chaska Truck Station and the Carver County Partnership. I think that probably somebody like Senator Roblin could speak more clearly on what this is, but we need to upgrade some of these, or Senator Ortman, we need to upgrade some of these facilities so that they work for everybody in the state. The same thing can be said about the truck centers on line 29 of the same page in Rochester and in Maple Grove. They need this $2 million so that they can make improvements, so that they can meet the demand that we have on our roadways today. Also on page 11 and continuing on to page 12 are two pots of money so that we can do local bridge replacement and rehabilitation. We have $50 million in this bill. Now, there's $70 million worth of requests from the locals to fix their deficient bridges. We only put 50 in here because they're going to be able to access gas tax money that's in this bill. We have a 5 cent a gallon gas tax increase with a debt surcharge. All of those monies are constitutionally dedicated to go to the Trunk Highway Fund. The Trunk Highway Fund has a distribution formula. The counties and municipals get a portion of that gas tax money. They're going to be able to leverage their money with this $50 million, and we will get all of those bridges on their first list up to that $70 million expenditure rate fixed, and hopefully fixed this construction cycle. There's also $10 million in the local road improvement program on page 10. These are all GO bonds. If you go further in the bill, page 13, we're starting to talk about the UPA agreement. There's also $18.1 million to fix the exterior of our transportation building right across the road here on John Ireland. There's some bond sale expenses, and then it moves in on page 13 to start talking about the execution of these bonds. Members, Article 3 is the highway user taxes. That's on page 14. On page 15, starting on the bottom of page 14, we start talking about the changes to the license tabs. And those license tabs are going to go up if you trade your vehicle. If you don't trade your vehicle, same thing as last year. You'll continue to pay whatever rate that you pay currently. So if you're at the bottom and paying $35, that's all you're going to pay. If you buy a brand new automobile, you're going to be asked to pay more. Page 16 is where you'll find the low-income motor fuels tax credit. We're going to provide a tax credit for those families, and this is total recall, folks, but we're going to provide a $25 tax credit for those families who are making right around $31,000 a year. So this meets another one of the governor's objectives, which was to provide some sort of tax relief to some of the poorest folks in our state. Make no mistake about it, this spells it out clearly that this is a 5 cent a gallon gas tax increase. 2 cents right now, 3 cents on October 1st. And that continues on through the top of page 18. Remember, starting on page 18 towards the middle of the page, we talk about the motor vehicle lease sales tax revenue. That's a pot of money that we feel is much like the invest money, and it should be transportation money. Over a period of years, we're going to phase that into the State Trunk Highway Fund, and it does capture quite a bit of money. By the year 2012, we should have 100% of that money. And it's important to note that that's, that portion of money is how we're doing two. We're going to meet two objectives. One is to make sure that the Met Council transit operations don't see a shortfall, and two, to provide transit in greater Minnesota. Starting on page 19, Article 4, we talk about local option sales tax, and this is where the Metropolitan Area Transportation Sales Tax Initiative is in the bill. We'll come back to that. I'll let Senator Dibble right now explain that. Senator Dibble, I yield.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. President. Members, the local option sales tax part starts on page 19, and I probably won't go through on a page-by-page explanation. It's not quite my style, but I'll just try to give a very quick, high-level overview of what this section provides for. Just very quickly, what what occurs is the establishment of a metropolitan transportation area, which consists of the seven counties that we think of in the metropolitan area typically. Additionally, the collar counties, the nine counties that are adjacent to the seven-county metro area, can become a part of the metropolitan transportation area, as well as those counties which are part of the North Star Development Authority. That's another way of saying Stearns County can also come in for the purpose of raising the sales tax in those counties by resolution of those county boards and forming a joint powers board. Bill allows for this joint powers board to determine for themselves the terms and conditions of participation, how those counties will come in, how they'll depart, how they'll provide for voting. On that joint powers board, the chair of the Metropolitan Council holds a voting seat. Every county that comes in that raises 3% or less of the total sales tax that's raised in the whole area is guaranteed to receive at least as much benefit as the amount that they raise. We call that the minimum guarantee counties. The half-cent sales tax is divvied up so that 50% of the proceeds go for transit, operations, and capital, 25% goes for roads of regional significance, and then 25% is reserved for flexibility so that the Joint Powers Board can respond to differing needs from year to year. And only up to 1.25% of the total is might be used as an option for bikeways and pedestrian facilities. A GEARS board is established to receive the grant applications. The GEARS board consists of members of local units of government, municipalities, as well as the Metropolitan Council Transportation Chair, holds a voting seat on that body. This GEARS board makes recommendations to the Joint Powers Board, who makes the grants that are submitted by those entities that are looking for resources for transit and road projects. Additionally, a technical committee is established, typically the staff, the engineers that comprise these local units of government and the Metropolitan Council. We do provide for a mechanism so that the Metropolitan Council approves of and makes a determination that the transit grants that are made are consistent with the approved transit portion of the transportation plan that the Metropolitan Council adopts on a periodic basis. If there's a disagreement between the Joint Powers Board and the Metropolitan Council about that question of consistency, a mechanism is provided for to allow some resolution of that difference of opinion. The first $30 million or so that's raised by the sales tax in this coming fiscal year is going to be appropriated to the Metropolitan Council for the purpose of dealing with their significant deficiency that they're experiencing in their operations budget. That deficiency is occurring for all the reasons that we're very familiar with, that the motor vehicle sales tax has been a very volatile source of income, and for some other purposes as well. Additionally, jumping to the end of the bill, where there are some other transit provisions, we do cease the practice of requiring counties to pay for 50% of the operations of rail lines. That was a fix that we put into place a few years ago when resources weren't coming forward for the operations of Hiawatha Light Rail. Hennepin County property taxpayers pay 50% of that operations, and we're going to, because we're raising sufficient resources through the sales tax to take care of that operations, counties no longer will be doing that. So that's part of what's added to that $30 million is to make sure that we're providing sufficient resources in the coming fiscal year for the operations of Hiawatha Light Rail. Additionally, just on that same note, we do cap out counties' participation in the capital effort for transitways to 10% of the total. It's appropriate for counties to participate in that capital effort, but it's also appropriate to kind of cap out their level. That does not prevent counties from providing resources for busway demonstrations, similar to what we've seen going up to the northwest suburbs, where the busway was established to show the viability of a commuter transit connection into the core cities. Counties can conceive of those and implement those demonstration projects. The sales tax is sunsetted to half of what will be collected, so it'll sunset to a quarter cent in the year 2028. If the Joint Powers Board does not come together and establish itself and start collecting the tax by October of this year, this whole section expires. Additionally, there is a, at the very end of the bill, there is a direction to the Metropolitan Council to couple together four transit lines and approach the Federal Transit Administration, present them as a package for the purpose of qualifying for the federal matching funds for all four of those lines at once. This is an innovation that other metropolitan areas have done, and it's been very successful for them. They've shown the commitment. They can demonstrate that they're putting money away on a rational, methodical basis. They have the resources to do the capital and operating and do a number of starts at the same time. Salt Lake City has done that. Denver has done that. There's no reason why we can't do that. At the rate we're going now, we're not going to see a build-out of the Metropolitan Council's 2030 plan until 2050 or later. But if we do pass this bill, we can get these lines implemented in the ground operating by 2020. And so that's what that section would accomplish. Greater Minnesota counties are also authorized to raise up to a half cent sales tax in their counties, or they can join with another county or two, and they would have to identify a specific transportation project or need, raise that up to half cent sales tax in their counties, pay for that, and then that sales tax would expire. And Mr. President, I think that is the extent of the provisions. I'll just say that this would accomplish a great deal for Minnesota, put it in league with other regions around the country with whom we compete for quality of life, for economic activity, allow us to create the sort of vital, revived neighborhoods that we're looking for in the state of Minnesota, give our seniors some options for where they can live and how they can get around, give our young people a reason to stay in Minnesota. I think it's a very, very exciting portion of the transportation bill. Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator Murphy, and before you begin your comments, I'm advised that there were like 12 handouts that were put on the desks. 10 of them had your name on, but two did not, and the other two were apparently yours. Is that correct?
Mr. President, to the members, I apologize. I know that we're supposed to put our name on these handouts, and I just blew one, but those two that have no names on it, they came from me. So, Mr. President, with that, and thank you, Senator Dibble.
Mr. President?
We can flip to page 25, and that is the changes to the County State Aid Highway Distribution Fund. And, members, I know that the distribution of the money around here and in this bill is very precarious because, you know, we have transit advocates, we have road advocates, we have metropolitan road advocates, we have Greater Minnesota road advocates, we have advocates for our municipal street system, our county system. We have all these advocates that are pushing to get more money. Now, this is the change in the CASA formula that was agreed upon 2 years ago. And I just want to tell folks that when all 87 counties get on the same page and say, okay, we agree to this, we see what the logic is behind it, we understand it, there were some counties that were a little disgruntled, but they voted yes. And that's the bottom line. All 87 counties approve of this change that we're putting in here, and that is because of the hard work that people like Mr. Molnar and Ms. Loveroe did to make sure that all those counties were aware of what they had to lose and what they had to gain. Now, folks, under this chapter, no county is going to lose what they're getting today. Some counties are going to get less of an increase than if they were on the old formula for the new money. Some counties are going to get more money on the new formula. But those are counties that are growing. Those are counties that are large. Those are counties that have the needs. So this changed a portion of that funding formula so that it recognized those needs. Counties like Carver, Dakota, Hennepin, Anoka, they're going to get more money, as well as a county that I represent, Goodhue. Olmsted's going to get more money. The county Stearns is going to get more money. So some of the counties that are growing, they're going to see more money under this. All 87 counties approved of this. Let's not monkey with it. That goes on for about 10 pages, and then, it goes on for 5 pages. And then, members, if you turn to page 30, Article 6, this is other issues about finance. These were a couple issues that were brought to our attention by several different groups. Leading the charge was Mr. Esteson and the Minnesota Truckers Association. They wanted restrictions on some of the things that we have been doing through our UPA agreement and 394 agreements. They're totally on board with those. But what they don't want is they don't want the state to sell their assets like they did in Indiana, like they're going to do in Pennsylvania, because it's going to drive up the cost of transportation for everyone and exclude some people who can't pay. This is an exclusion, folks, to toll roads in our state unless we come back and say that it's okay. We're not going to sell the state assets, and we're not going to start opening up toll roads all over the place. That's unfair to the motoring public. We pay for our roads in this state with the gas tax, with the license tabs, and those other constitutionally dedicated sources of revenue. Starting at the bottom of page 30, we talk about the 5% flexible fund. And in the past, we've used that flexible fund for several things. We change it here, one, to continue to do turnbacks. We've always done that with our local We've always partnered with our local jurisdictions to make sure that those turnbacks proceed without too many hiccups. Also in this provision are two other important components of our bill. One is a safety improvement on county highways, municipal highways, streets, or towns and roads. We're going to take a portion of this 5% flexible fund, and we're going to fund safety improvements so that we clean up some of those hot intersections where they have high accident rates and fatality rates that just don't need to happen. And we're also going to provide money for routes of regional significance. These are routes that, like in Senator Jungbauer's district, he has a road that's highly traveled. It's a route of regional significance, and they don't quite meet the threshold of getting money from MnDOT. They'll be able to access money under this account now and hopefully improve the congestion and accident rates in those areas of regional significance. Members, earlier I talked about the bridge bonding account. That's on page 32 of the bill. I think that in light of where our state is at, it makes very good sense to try to tackle those bridges. I think that this idea, which was the other body's idea, is an excellent idea. It's something that we need in law, folks, to guarantee that our motoring public is going to be traveling over bridges that are safe. On page 33, we start with a statewide transportation planning report. This is a report that we're going to ask MnDOT to do to try to calculate what, in the future, what types of funding is going to be needed to meet our future demands, not just what the demands are of today. On page 34 is where we have the reinstatement fee. These are people who have had DWIs, and we all know that the reinstatement fee is exceptionally high. We're going to allow people who are working that need to have a driver's license, you know, a work permit to get back and forth to work. We're going to let them pay that in two payments. You know, there's a lot of poor folks, a lot of working poor. They make a mistake, they get a DWI, but we still want them to be able to get back and forth to work and get their kids to the doctor and such. And that's why we're going to split this payment up, kind of spread it out a little bit, recognizing the fact that a lot of families don't have $400 or $500 just laying around. This was a proposal that was brought to us by Senator Latz. He did a lot of hard work to make sure that all of that worked, and it is a very good provision. On page 36, We talk a little bit about some transit funding. Senator Dibble tackled the vast majority of that. But I just want people to know that Section 8 that starts on 36 and goes over to 37 is a key component to making sure that in the metropolitan area we have a complete build-out, much like Salt Lake City did. They approached the federal government because their lines didn't meet this fictitious CEI, this cost-effective index. Their lines didn't meet that either. And it's because, basically because the federal government changed the rules halfway through the game. Now, if we were playing a sandlot baseball game and in the third inning decided to run to first and then the right field and then through the bleachers and the dugout and through the concession stand and then out to second base, I think somebody would not be happy. Well, because of the federal government changing the rules of the game halfway into a program, it made all 50 states crazy, made us all mad. So what Salt Lake did was they said, we have a dedicated source of revenue. We're going to approach the federal government. Even though the majority of our lines don't meet the CEI, we do have one that does. We're going to package them all up and approach the federal government and say, here's what we've got. We've got a dedicated source of revenue, and we want to build five lines instead of just one. And that they sat down with the federal government, they cut a deal, and today Salt Lake City is building five rail lines, five. And we're still stuck on trying to pay for one. Now, what we want them to do is package up the Red Rock, the extension of the North Star up to Senator Fishbach's neck of the woods, all the way up to past St. Cloud. We want them to approach the federal government to get the Rush Line included and a couple other of these transit ways to make them a reality. And folks, if we're successful, we will clearly eclipse the 2020 plan. Right now, the Metropolitan Council's 2020 plan is actually not going to get built until 2030 or thereafter. With this provision, if we're successful, once again, we can make a guarantee to the people in the metropolitan area that you will have rail service. We will have a build out of our system before 2030. Members, I run to the end of the page here, and it's now 12:15, so thank you very much. The last thing that I want to say, Mr. President, is that this bill would not have come together in this form without the help of a lot of people. And it's a lot of folks, counties, municipals, construction trades. All of these folks work to make this a better bill. We've compromised umpteen times with this. The Speaker of the House counted it up the other day, and we had compromised no less than 17 times to make this bill a reality. There's several people that we need to thank for making sure that we've got a good document in front of us, and that's our team transportation. And everybody knows who they are. They're standing in the back row here. Everybody can give a little wave. Even Senator Metzen, and the other person that was instrumental in making sure that there was a fine balance and an appropriate balance in this bill was Senator Scott Dibble. Without his patience, fortitude, and quite frankly, reasonable approach to this bill, it wouldn't have happened. Thank you, members.
Members, I've been asked to make a brief request from the front desk. During the session here, as we have amendments either for this bill or other bills along the way, they're only going to make a limited number of paper copies. Now, the amendments will be available on your laptops, but if you prefer a paper copy, you need to notify the front desk. They will keep a list. And then only those members who actually want paper copies will have them provided to them. They're not going to be making multiple paper copies and then have them thrown away. So we'll be repeating this a couple of times, but if you want paper copies of the amendments, notify the front desk. You will get a paper copy. Otherwise, you can look at them on your laptop. We would like to have as many people as possible look at them on their laptop so we don't use more paper than we have to. Thank you. Senator Polgar-Miller.
Mr. President,
I suppose it's cleanest to lay it on the table before we recess, or not? I would.
Yeah, lay it on the table.
I would move them that Senate File 2521 be laid on the table.
On that motion, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. Senator Folgermiller.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to just go to announcements real quick. Senator Shide needs to announce a committee meeting, and then we will come back, members, from our recess at 2:30.
Are there any announcements for the recess? Senator Shide.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't believe I said that. Mr. President. I'm sorry. I apologize. I had my mind on what the other body might be doing or not. I would like to have the Senate Commerce and Consumer Protection members be at the committee at 1:30, not a minute later, please, so we have just 1 hour to do Senator Latz's bill.
Senator Roebling.
Thank you. The Higher Ed Committee is meeting at 12:30, and the University of Minnesota President Bob Brunix is going to be there to speak about the capital investment requests, and Senator Pappas is requesting that our members be on time. Thank you.
Senator Moore.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Judiciary Committee that's scheduled to convene at 3 o'clock, we're still going to keep that. We might be delayed depending on what happens here on the floor, but I just want members of the public and senators who have bills that are scheduled for the committee to just pay attention, because we will meet as soon as whatever we get done here on the floor.
Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Senate Environment, Energy, and Natural Resources Budget Division is scheduled to meet at 12:30 as per our normal schedule, and we will be finalizing our binding recommendations in this hearing.
Senator Senjum.
Mr. President, Senate Republicans meeting 1:15 at the place that we talked about a little earlier today.
Mr. President.
Senator Folgermiller.
I would move that we recess till 2:15. Till 2:15, and at that point, we will start to take up debate and amendments to Senate File 2521.
On the motion of Senator Folgermiller to recess until 2:15, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, motion prevails. The Senate is in recess until 2:15 p.m.
To bring in the absent members.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. President.
Senator Folgermiller.
I'd move to take Senate File 2521 off the table.
On the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
And I would yield to Senator Murphy. And I think members may be aware that the House is apparently fairly close to passing the companion to this bill. So I think if we just show a little patience here, we'll have a clearer picture of what the situation is.
Senator Murphy, discussing Senate File 2521. Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and members. Once again, Senate File 2521 is the future of Minnesota's transportation infrastructure, both transit operations, roads, bridges, water ports, airports, railways, you name it, this is it. Now, we have a legislative auditor's report, and I think that most people in this chamber have at least read the summary. And I don't think I need to reiterate what the legislative auditor has said, other than if we wait any longer, we will be beyond critical mass. In other words, if we wait one more year, two more years, three more years to pass a comprehensive transportation bill, the one that's in front of you today, that our state will continue its economic slide and also our roads and bridges and transitways will continue to deteriorate. Folks, we can either step to the plate and take a bite out of this transportation issue today, or we can continue to wait and wait and wait. The longer we wait, the worse it gets. Now, when Senator Arata was the lead Republican on our committee back in 05, we passed a bill that was clearly, well, it was right on the edge. It was right on the edge of $12 billion of new spending over a 10-year construction cycle. We pared that bill down last year, and we came out with a bill that was getting pretty close to $1 billion of new spending. That bill failed to become law. This year, we took, and working with different groups and different legislators, we brought forward a bill that raised a little over $1 billion of new spending. That was too much. We cut it down. Went down to about $850 million of new spending over a 10-year period. $8.5 billion over a 10-year period. We cut it down again to where it can't, and the bill in front of you is worth about $7.7 billion over a 10-year construction cycle. We've done this to try to gain votes. We've done it to try to bring harmony to a subject that is very difficult to bring harmony to. Everybody has a different spin on how transportation should occur in our state. Rural legislators are different than our colleagues in the suburbs or our colleagues in the metro area. Metro folks are concerned about transit and opportunities for transportation that we may not need in greater Minnesota, or we don't need at the rate that they need it in the metropolitan area and in the suburbs. So there's a host of pushing and pulling and competing interests in this discussion. We have a balance. And when this bill comes over from the House, not only will we have all of those organizations that are interested in transportation, all the transit folks, all the roads and bridges people, the folks with the airports, Senator Jungbauer, those folks are taken care of. The people in the water ports, those folks are addressed and taken care of. And when this amendment comes over from the House of Representatives, when the bill comes over from there, we will also have the support of the State Chamber of Commerce. I don't know about anybody else, but I've been on the other side of the Chamber of Commerce on many issues. And to have them work to ensure that this bill passes and becomes law, I think we deserve, the whole state deserves to thank David Olson and the Minnesota Chamber for stepping to the plate. Now, there's a lot of people who have worked long and hard on this, and sometimes we get a little cross with each other, but like my friend Senator Dill always says, why can't we all just get along? Now, folks, when the bill comes over from the House, yes, there's going to be tax increases in it, because as the legislative auditor says, we can't borrow our way to prosperity in the area of transportation. It won't happen. And borrowing, as the legislative auditor says, is one of the major reasons why we've seen a deterioration of our roadways. A legislative auditor says that maybe you ought to think about raising taxes to bring some new revenues in. When the bill comes over from the House and we adopt the language, the House language, you'll see that once again we've taken some of the money out of the bill. But we're doing that in return to have a little bit of harmony here. so that my friend Steve Dill can vote for the bill, so people like Claire Roebling will feel comfortable, so people who worked long and hard on it, like Senator Dibble, who has more to lose with this bill coming from the House than to gain. We need to have a bill that they, too, can vote for. Now, folks, what we have in front of us today, the Senate file before we adopt the House language, does have $7.7 billion of new spending in it. We feel that we make strategic investments. We work with the bridge people at MnDOT to make sure that that bridge count does what we are going to promise our constituents that it does, and that is to fix every Tier 1 bridge in the state by 2018. No excuses, no compromise. Every bridge will be repaired. We build mechanisms into the bill so that that accountability is there. There's other accountability measures in the bill. People say that, well, what are you doing for local jurisdictions? Well, let's think about this for just a second, folks. Everybody knows how the formulas are for transportation. Once we get money in from the gas tax, it goes into the trunk highway fund, where there is a constitutional separation of that money. The state gets a lion's share. The counties get a portion. Municipals get a portion. Townships, sooner or later, get a little bit. But the idea here is our gas tax and these revenues that we're raising outside of the sales tax are dedicated to roads and bridges. Some of the lease tax money is going to go for greater Minnesota transit. Everything is dedicated. We're not going to build hockey rinks. That's not going to happen. We're not going to build schools. We're not going to spend the money on the environment or pollution control or give it to the DNR. The money that is being raised with this bill goes for roads, bridges, transit projects, improving our ports and waterways, improving our rail service. All of these transportation pieces work together like a hand going into a glove. We can't have a roads-only approach. It doesn't work. We found that out in the metropolitan area. We can't have a transit-only approach. That doesn't work for any place, metro or rural or suburbs. We can't have a water ports-only solution. That doesn't work. So we've built a comprehensive package that works for Minnesota. Is it a tax increase? Yes, it is. But folks, I'm tired of looking at the paper every day and seeing another obituary when I know that if we had some more resources, we could prevent a lot of the fatalities that happen on our roads. I don't want to be picking up the paper 5 years from now and reading about Medtronic or 3M or some other business here in the metropolitan area deciding to move to Phoenix or Denver or some other place. But you know what? As far-fetched as that sounds, it could happen. And we have had businesses leave the state of Minnesota because they don't have what they need when it comes to transportation. Now, folks, for the economic vitality of our state, we need this bill. To help keep our families together and reduce the fatalities and injuries on our highways, we need this bill. I can't stress enough how strongly I feel that transportation is the wheel that turns the economy of our state. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Pogermiller.
Mr. President, I'd like to move a brief recess for an announcement.
On the motion for a brief recess, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails. Senator Pogermiller.
Senate's
in recess.
Mr. President, today is a day that we need to honor because one of our members has a very significant birthday today. And because we're not sure the way the rest of the day is going to go, there is going to be a party in the retiring room during the debate.
Hope you didn't have anybody on the floor.
Perhaps the birthday boy would like to say a word, or perhaps he would just like for everybody to notice who he is in the retiring room. Would Senator Saxhog yield?
Senator Saxhog.
Well, you know, when I first came here, I was 54, and that was the median age of the Senate. And I don't think that's the median. I don't think 54 is the median age, and now I'm going to be 60 tomorrow. So hey. I don't know if I appreciate the recognition or not, but I'm not in Grand Rapids, so I won't take a lot of heat there. Thanks very much.
And, Mr. President, I think I missed how old that was.
Is that 80 or 70? 70. 60.
Mr. President, there is a cake in the other room, okay. And I think the official date is tomorrow, but there's a cake in the retiring room.
Okay, Senate will come to order. Okay, discussion on the bill. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Would Senator Murphy yield for a question?
He will yield. Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you. Senator Murphy, you referenced this bill as a way to restore the economic vitality of the state and to deal with the economic malaise that we're in. And I'm just wondering, I'm looking at the national scene a little bit, and we have Speaker Pelosi and Senator Clinton and President Bush seeming to be on the same page that tax reductions and rebates spurs economic growth and not gigantic tax increases. So I'm just wondering, is this some kind of new Minnesota economics, or what plan are we following with this approach?
Senator Burke.
Mr. Senator President Murphy. And Senator Vandeveer, I'm glad that you asked that question. Secretary of Transportation Peters put out a report from the Department of Transportation at the federal level, President Bush's right-hand person on transportation, and in it, it had a formula on what highway construction means for overall job growth. And what they did was they added not only the construction jobs, but the spinoff jobs. Because, Senator Vandeveer, you're not from greater Minnesota, but I can, Senator Vickerman can tell you. If you build a decent interchange, they will come. Period. They will come. Because businesses are looking for transportation advantages. That formula comes straight out of the Federal Highway Administration, and it's got Mary Peters' name hooked to it, who is George Bush's appointee as Secretary of the Federal Department of Transportation. All we did was use their formula, plug the numbers in that we have in the bill, and you come up with 33,000 jobs. Now, Senator Vandeveer, you have to understand that it's not 33,000 jobs anymore once we take the House language, because now we're going to take even a lesser amount of money. But the thing is, this is not, as you said, a gigantic tax increase. As a matter of fact, if most people figure it out, and most people drive vehicles today that get more than 20 miles a gallon, so figure it out. You know, if you drive 10,000 miles, 20 miles a gallon, just how much money are you going to spend? If you don't trade vehicles, or if you're like the majority of Minnesotans, that when they trade vehicles, they buy one that's 3, 4, 5 years old, that license tab fee, Senator Vandeveer, that you talk about, that's not going to be a big impact for that family. In greater Minnesota, this means, well, for me, I'm not going to trade any vehicles anytime soon, Senator Vandeveer, even though my vehicles all have more than 120,000 miles on them. But for me, as much driving as I do means about $50 a year. I don't think that's too much to ask for safety.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Murphy, it is a pretty large tax increase. There's a 0.5% sales tax. I assume that's still there. And I'm looking at the impact of vehicle registration tax changes. My constituents that drive a 2006 Impala, pretty middle-of-the-road car, their tax, their license fees are going up 45%. And I haven't, according to this handout, but I haven't heard of increasing taxes as an economic stimulus package, and I'm still not quite sold on this, but I'll keep listening, Senator Murphy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator Vandeveer, your constituent that has the 06 Impala, they're going to pay next year the same thing that they paid for their cabs this year. As a matter of fact, they'll be on the old formula, and it's actually going to go down. So they're getting a good deal, Senator Vandeveer. And in regards to trickle down, you're talking about the trickle down of cutting taxes, and it sooner or later comes down, and you know us at the bottom or middle, we somehow benefit from it. I'm still waiting to benefit from that trickle down economics. It hasn't worked for my family, but I can guarantee you for all those families that have mom or dad sitting on the bench not working, and then we pass this bill and they go back to work at jobs where they're making $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year, that's economic enterprise right there at its best.
Senator Vandeveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, Senator Murphy, I'm looking at your handout on a 2006 Chevy Impala, so unless that's been changed, the total paid fee would be $947 today, and under the new proposal, $1,356. That looks like $409 to me, which kind of looks like 45% of $947. But maybe this one isn't accurate anymore. But this isn't about trickle down. This is about laying heavy taxes on people at a time when they're short of money themselves, the economy's slowing, and the Republicans and Democrats in the United States Congress are taking an exact opposite approach as the state of Minnesota. So,
Senator Murphy.
Well, thank you, Mr. President. And once again, Senator Vandeveer, if you read that section, it says that if you own a vehicle today, you're not going to pay any more tomorrow. Once you trade that vehicle in, then you're going to be on the new schedule. And if you own a newer vehicle, then you'll pay more.
All right.
All right. So if you trade the vehicle in, you go to the new schedule, then the possibility of you paying more increases, period. But if you read the bill, and if your constituent bought that 06 today or tomorrow, they're going to pay the same thing in 09, 10, 11, 12 that they're paying today. They're not going to go on the new schedule, Senator Vandeveer.
Senator Vandeveer.
Mr. President, no wonder people don't like politicians. All right, as long as you never sell your car, you're fine.
All right, let's...
Mr. President, if Senator... Oh, Senator Vandeveer left. Never mind.
All right, why don't we go on with further discussion of the bill. Senator Ortman. Senator Ortman.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think the analogy of Senator Murphy is just a little bit flawed. He talked about $7.7 billion spending in this bill and how it's going to fit hand in glove, but I think it's hand in pocket. $7.7 billion. We are in a recession. I wonder at the priorities of the members of the Minnesota State Senate that we are talking about raising taxes and spending $7.7 billion more in the economy. Where are we going to get that money? It's going to come right out of the pockets of the hardworking Minnesotans in this state who are barely surviving in their families right now. Since last year, tens of thousands of people have lost their jobs in this state. Tens of thousands of families have lost their homes.
Minnesota families may be in crisis, and you stand here, Senator Murphy, members of the Minnesota State Senate, and you ask them to somehow come up with more, and not just on luxury items. This isn't an income tax. This is a sales tax. It's regressive. You're asking the poorest of the poor Minnesotans to subsidize transportation. You're asking them to pay more for gas tax, and they can barely afford to get to work. The gas tax is very expensive, and Minnesotans have said in poll after poll that they cannot afford, nor do they support, any more in gas taxes. And yet here we are debating this bill on the Senate floor, and I think somebody's head must be in the sand, because the biggest concern of Minnesotans today is not transportation, members. The biggest concern of Minnesotans today is the economy, their jobs, the survival of their family, the bills that they have to pay, the fact that their mortgages are in default, the fact that they can't pay off their credit cards. We have completely missed the boat by bringing this bill up today in the Minnesota State Senate. We should be waiting for the economic forecast, February 28th. It's not that long away. Couldn't we be a little bit more patient here? Couldn't we be a little bit more deliberate, thoughtful about this? I don't think we need this debate today, to be perfectly honest. What's the big rush? Will 10 days in the enactment here make any difference to the state? I don't think so. But a lot more information is available for us on February 28th about how Minnesota families are doing, about how Minnesota businesses are doing, about whether we can afford this. This is indiscriminate. It's not very deliberate. It's rather thoughtless. And I would hope that members would put their urgency on hold. It's really not thoughtful. Take our time here. Wait for the economic forecast. Surely we can wait 10 days to see if Minnesotans can afford $7.7 billion in new taxes.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. And I just took a couple notes here on some of the rhetoric that Senator Ortman was verbosing about. But Senator Ortman, I really don't know where to start. First of all, and you know this because you're on the Transportation Committee, but we are currently underfunding our transportation system by $2.4 billion of investment every year. For a 10-year construction cycle, MnDOT, and this is their own numbers, they say they need another $20 billion. We're asking for 7.7, and it's new money, it's not borrowing. Borrowing is what, and I'm sure you read the legislative auditor's report, borrowing is the reason why we're in this trouble today. You can't borrow your way into prosperity. Sooner or later, you got to pay. Now, it's like the old Fram oil commercial. You know, you can give us a $5 oil filter now, or 5 years from now, you can replace your entire engine. Well, folks, here we're at the point where we should have bought that oil filter about 10 or 15 years ago, because now we're having to buy a whole new motor block. But what we're proposing is, instead of trying to get all of the money and overreach as we've been accused of in the past, we've lowered our expectations several different times. And now we're at the $7.7 billion problem. 7.7 for $20 billion worth of needs. And those are identified needs that can be touched, they can be rationalized, and it was put together by the Minnesota Department of Transportation. So I ask, Mr. President and Senator Ortman, if you're not for this now, what are you for, and when are you for it?
Senator Ortman.
Mr. President, Senator Murphy, I'm glad you asked. Thank you. $7.7 billion, do you know how much that is compared to our state's budget of $33 billion? You want to raise our budget by 25% in one bill. One bill, 25%, the whole state's budget. And who do you think will pay for that? The taxpayers will pay for that. $7.7 billion. Can our economy afford that right now? Can Minnesota families afford this gas tax increase and an increase in the sales tax? I don't think so.
Senator Hartman,
apologize. Thank you, Mr. President. Senate Republicans have brought forward some proposals. We've asked you to be more moderate. They were proposed in the Transportation Committee, proposed in the Tax Committee, and they were all turned down. Mr. President, we can do better. We can serve Minnesotans better by taking our time, by being thoughtful, by being deliberate, and making sure that they can afford what we in the Minnesota State Senate ask them to pay for. I think we just have to wait just a few days. We can be a little bit more patient when it comes to reaching into their pockets and asking them to pay more for services in the state of Minnesota.
And Mr. President,
Senator Murphy.
Because of our inaction, Senator Ortman, and we have another report coming from the Plante administration that clearly shows that 23% of the increase of property taxes in the past 5 years has been because local jurisdictions don't have money to do road projects. Now, our constituents, when it comes to road safety, are depending upon us to put mechanisms into place to keep them, their moms and dads, and their kids safe. I mean, it's pretty easy to understand. They want us to keep them safe. That means providing law enforcement out on our roads. That's the state patrol. That's our county deputies. That's, the Red Wing Police Department. It's the Chaska Police Department. People expect that. They expect those folks to be out there to help provide safety. They also expect, when they're out driving around on the roads, that they don't come upon blind intersections or drop-offs without guardrails or intersections with no lighting. They don't expect that. They expect the road to be in decent shape. Now, once again, Fram oil filter. We can either get that now or we can get the whole engine block in a few years. So I leave it up to the chamber. And if we continue this road of inaction, I mean, the legislative auditor was correct. If we continue to do this, those 80% of the roads that need to be fixed down in my district, Senator Ortman, in 5 years, it's going to be 100% of the roads in 7 years. I don't want that. I don't think you want that for my constituents. I don't want it for yours. You know, there's a lot of farmers out in your neck of the woods that bring their grain over to the terminal in Red Wing. You know, I want them to be able to have that opportunity. I also want every family in the state of Minnesota to have a reasonable insurance that they're as safe as reasonably possible when they get out on the roads. And part of that is making sure that we do have the lights up at the intersection, that we have the stop signs up, the guardrails replaced, the potholes filled, all of the things that we all want. Now, you can either pay me now or pay me later. I don't like the pay later thing because that means my grandson gets to pay for something that he didn't have anything to do with. I mean, we're already sticking the next generation with our Social Security retirement. We're already sticking them with Medicare and Medicaid. Who knows what's going to come next? Us baby boomers need to stand up and take responsibility. And if it means we have to take a difficult vote on a tax increase, and you have never heard me try to say that this bill was not a tax increase. This is a tax increase, period. Much like cutting of LGA is a tax increase, period. We all know what happens. So what do we want? Do we want to pay for this through our property tax system? Because transportation is the biggest reason why your property taxes have went up other than increased valuation. Transportation costs. So you want to pay it on your property taxes and continue to have the roadways that we do? Or do you want to be straightforward and tell the public, we don't like raising taxes, but we're left with no choice? Folks, these are constitutionally dedicated sources of revenue. We're building roads, bridges, transit systems. We're fixing the bulkhead at the Red Wing Harbor so that your farmers, Senator Ortman, can bring their grain over. We're fixing these things. We can either fix them with our property tax, or we can be straightforward and say we're going to have the courage to stand up and do this. Now, I can understand for the people who have traditionally resisted tax increases. That's part of your mantra. That's part of your belief, much like Senator Vandiver believes that cutting taxes is a way of building prosperity. I understand that. And if you don't vote for the bill, that's the way it is. Don't vote for the bill. That's fine. But when we start building things, don't bother showing up to cut the ribbons on the bridge in your neck of the woods. Don't bother showing up taking credit for the guardrail that got put back up. And as politicians, we're real good about taking credit for sometimes for things that we had nothing to do with. So I'm going to say, once again, if you don't vote for the bill, don't show up to cut the ribbons.
Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. President. While Senator Murphy knows I agree with him on the need, we are diametrically opposed on how do we get there. And the first part of the problem is acknowledging that we made some mistakes in the past, and I think we got to start there. And if we forget where we come from, we can't fix overnight that which we ignored for 20 years. Going back Carlson administration and before, we've ignored the roads. We've taken the money away. We've put it into that great black hole of the general fund, and the people of Minnesota finally constitutionally dedicated part of that money back. We have a problem. We need to take a bigger chunk of the general fund. You know, and I, members, I actually had all kinds of ideas where we could take the money from, but I think next week we're going to find out we're going to need to crunch the budget down, and there's not other places to take the money from today. But today, members, besides our constitutionally dedicated amounts for funding, only 0.7% of the general fund, 0.7%, goes to our transportation needs. Besides it being, this bill being a huge regressive tax, huge, you know, all that good energy stuff we put in, members, and protecting the environment stuff, that might be well and good, but it is all regressive to the poorest of the poor. The energy costs of home heating, electricity, and now transportation, we're literally telling the poor, stay at home because you can't afford, if you can even afford to heat your house, and you're going to have to choose between heating and eating. It's disgusting the way we pile on, and we don't understand how we are making people pay what they cannot afford to pay today. The next thing I heard Senator Murphy say was, well, you know, we should tax, and somehow I, you know, in all that study I've done in economics, I can't ever remember finding an economist that said we could tax our way to prosperity. But as always, and a challenge to all members, if you can find some documentation that somebody in the past has taxed their way into prosperity, please share it with me, because I'm one of those people that always likes to find out this stuff. However, if you look at Keynesian economics, and Keynes was considered quite a liberal, quite honestly out to lunch on most economic theory, but he had this neat theory that somehow in a recession we could borrow and we should borrow on infrastructure to get our economy back going, because when we're in a recessionary status, businesses will not pay, the citizens cannot afford to pay, and Keynes clearly stated that you should operate in a deficit or borrow in order to get your economy going back that way. No, members, I will vote no, even though I am the first to admit we need this kind of money, and anybody can come out in front of my house. It has great potholes that can swallow up your bicycle, or you can disappear while you're out taking a jog, but I will not tax the citizens at a time they can least afford it.
Senator Hand.
Thank you, Mr. President, and I've been paying attention to the discussion between Senator Ortman and Senator Murphy, and I think Senator Ortman asked some good questions and we didn't get any answers yet. And I think the fundamental question that we have to ask ourselves is, why are we doing this today? why are we doing this today? We all recognize that there has been a neglect of transportation funding for a long time, decades. In fact, the majority party in this body has been the majority party in this body for 35 years. I think if anybody would be aware of the need for long-standing reform to how we fund transportation, the majority party would know that, but apparently they were not able to do that over the past 35 years, and so it's going to come due to the Pawlenty administration to do this. But we have to ask ourselves, would we have the same discussion about this bill 2 weeks from now as we're having today? And why don't we want to know what the status of our budget is, the fiscal status that we are in? Why don't we want to know that before we adopt this level of taxation? Why don't we want to know that? 4 years ago, we had a big $4.5 billion deficit, and we had $4.5 billion of new taxes proposed by the majority party to solve that deficit. A couple of years ago, we had a surplus, and we had another $4 billion of taxes proposed during a surplus to fund new spending. We're looking at a half a billion, a billion, a billion and a half dollar deficit? Nobody knows for sure in a week or now, week or so from now. So we're going to have then, I presume, a proposal from the majority party to raise taxes another billion or billion and a half to cover the deficit that we'll be looking at in our budget. Now my question is very simply this. Why don't we want to wait to find out that what that is? Why don't we want to wait to find out just what we're going to have to do to balance this budget before we go to the public and say, let's raise taxes $7 billion. And I have not got any seen any information that says the majority of the public wants to do this. Our gas tax is 20 cents a gallon. Nationwide, the average gas tax is 18.2 cents. We are not the lowest gas tax state in the country. I think Senator Jungbauer is right. We need to spend more money. We don't spend enough in our general fund. I don't believe there's any general fund money in this bill going to transportation. It's all new money. What we're saying is that we want to spend more money for something like transportation. Let's not reprioritize what we're currently doing. Let's not look for what we're doing and ask, is it really being effective and maybe it would be better used for roads and bridges. We're not asking that. We're saying, nope, everything we're doing today, we ought to keep doing and do more of it. And if we want to spend more money in transportation, it all has to be new dollars. And I think that is irresponsible when you look at the growth of the Minnesota state budget. 10% in the last biennium. What will be next biennium? What is the growth of personal income from citizens in this state? It's not nearly that. What's it going to be after we pass this tax increase? And what's it going to be in 2 weeks when we have to pass, I suppose, another tax increase to cover the deficit? I just wonder, and I think the people who are bringing this bill today need to tell the public very clearly why we're doing this today and not a week or 2 weeks from now. It's not going to make any difference in when the contracts get let. It's not going to make any difference when the roads start getting built. It would seem to me just prudent and reasonable to wait to see what the budget looks like before we go to the public and say, pony up another $7.5 billion in taxes. And so, Senator Murphy, I think that you'll find broad agreement on a need to do some prioritization of spending on transportation. And I think you can ask a fair question. Why have we done this in the past? And I think the majority party ought to look in the mirror and ask why they haven't done that. But the body that's here today has a right to ask, why are we doing this today instead of looking at this when we know what our fiscal picture is going to be? Why are we doing it today? Do we just not want to know that? Do we want to pass this and then, after we find out, say, well, we've already spent all this money over here. I guess, I don't know, what does it do for us? Why don't we wait and find out what that financial picture is before we pass this bill? And I think we should get an answer for that.
Further discussion on Senate File 2521. Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Mr. President. You know, we have been hearing about General Motors and Ford laying off workers because car sales are down. And I guess I've heard Senator Murphy say today that if you keep your current vehicle, you have no new tax in the on your tab fees. And I guess that I'm wondering about this disincentive to buy new vehicles and what that does in our economy, which we know is important to our automakers and auto dealers and all of those people. If we already have a sagging economy, and now we're giving another disincentive not to buy a new vehicle because your tab fees could dramatically increase, maybe a couple hundred dollars even originally, and then slowly go down, that's not a good thing. And the other thing I'm wondering about is the increase in the sales tax. And I'm not sure I understand if in the metro area The sales tax on automobiles will also go from 6.5% to 7%. And then there's some mention of a $20 fee, and I don't know if that's in addition to the sales tax increase or a substitute for. And I'm wondering if Senator Murphy would yield to explain that, what the increase in the sales tax, a half-cent increase in this bill, would do on automobile sales and the $20 fee that I'm also seeing as, in the bill.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, and Senator Roebling, it's pretty simple. The metro sales tax doesn't apply to motor vehicle purchases. It's only that $20. That's the way it's always been.
Further discussion? Further discussion on the bill? We're ready for amendments.
I'm over here.
I'm sorry, it's Senator Day. We could still discuss if you'd like further amendments.
Mr. President.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. President, members, if you've got amendments, now's the time to bring them up. Because I can tell you right now, when the bill comes over from the House, your amendments aren't going to line up. They're going to get ruled out of order, and then they're going to be sent packing as being useless. So if you got amendments, bring them up now, and we'll discuss them. But when that bill comes over, your amendments aren't going to fit on it.
All right, listen here. If you have amendments, we want to hear about them. Otherwise, I believe we could give the bill its third reading and then lay it on the table. Can't we? Is it drafted to the Senate bill, Senator Gerlach?
Well, Mr. President, I just want to make sure. I mean, there seems to be some confusion here. I had an amendment drafted up, and I asked for it to be drafted to the bill that we're ultimately going to be doing. I'm not sure about the number, so I was just asking at the front desk. I want to make sure I'm doing this procedurally correct, so if we can have a moment so I can sort that out, and I want to make sure it's drafted to the correct bill.
Mr. President, there's been some discussions about the best way to expedite the process, and I think there's a preference by a number of members who have amendments to the bill that they would like to offer it to the vehicle that they think will be the live vehicle. And I think there's a growing assumption or understanding that the House file that will be sent to us will be the live vehicle. So I think the best way to proceed is to recess to the call of the chair until the House file arrives and there's been time to engross and those members are able to process their amendments. Now, just so the members know that I'm not naive.
Well,
we are absolutely going to process that before midnight. And if a member's not able to get their amendment processed, I'm sorry, because we have provided an opportunity for members to do that now, and members have chosen not to do that. So there will, I presume, that there will be a number of members on the floor who want that bill processed tonight. And so another assumption, someone accused me of making assumptions, let me make another assumption. I'm presuming that there are enough members who would like to process that bill tonight that we will process that bill before midnight. So, members are going to get their opportunity to draft amendments, but we're not going to allow a member's individual request or five members' individual request to say, I haven't had time to get my amendment drafted, therefore will you lay the bill over till tomorrow? Now, if the majority of the body wants to do that, we will obviously do that. But we want to respect members' time and efforts to get the job done and for members to process their what they believe are good amendments. So, and we'll do that. So I think, Mr. President, I would move to lay Senate file 2521 on the table.
Motion is to move to lay the bill on the table. I don't believe it's debatable. But if you go ahead, Senator Day, we're going to give you a little.
Well,
Senator Day.
It doesn't bother me if you lay it on a table or it leaves until another day or whatever, but isn't the Minnesota Senate the Minnesota Senate majority leader? I mean, you don't even know what's in the bill, or I guess maybe you know exactly what's going to be in the bill. I mean, you're taking the faith of, you're telling all of us that we should honor the House bill when it gets here? I'm
Mr. President, I think, Senator Day, you misunderstood.
Okay.
There's been a preference by members who have amendments to offer their amendments to the House file when it comes over. And that's what we're trying to accommodate now.
Yeah. Everybody, the way I understand it, Senator Pogemiller, will have a right to offer an amendment when the House bill comes over. So nobody's fencing anybody out, so I don't think it's anything to be worried about. But you do have to get them drafted at an appropriate time. That's the only thing. But I think we'll be able to do it. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. President. But as I recall the discussion, our concern was that we were offering amendments to the real bill, the actual bill that was going to pass, and not to the Senate file, which we know or are told is going to be substituted. Now, if we draft an amendment to the Senate file and you substitute the House file, then we have all this different language. We do not know what is in the bill we're going to be offering amendments to. And so until we have that bill, to say that if we don't get our amendments drafted in time that we can't offer them, which is what I thought the majority leader said, is to say that we don't get to offer amendments to the House bill. And okay. That seems a little bit unjust, I would say.
Let me just, this motion is non-debatable.
No, Mr. President, please. Senator, I think you misunderstood.
the cleaner process, which had been suggested, was that we offer amendments to the Senate file that's in front of us, and then under the condition that the House file was what was accepted by the floor to work off of, then members could offer amendments to that also. What I understood the discussion was members thought, no, why don't we just offer them all to the House file when it comes over here? Okay. The other thing we could do is offer the amendments to the Senate file with a commitment that whatever the Senate file language is when the House file comes over, we put that language onto the House file. We could do that too. We're just looking for a way to process this in an orderly fashion. Because Mr. President, I'd move a brief recess to discuss this further with Senator Senjum. Brief recess.
Withdraw your other motion.
I withdraw the previous motion, just offer a brief recess.
Okay, that on the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion fails. Senate's in recess.